On the Job with Francis Leach and Sally Rubb.
It's On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. I'm Francis Leach.
I'm Sally Rugg, and the things I say in the podcast today don't necessarily represent the views of my employer.
The things I say will be lost on the summer breeze as you enjoy your next Aperol spritz on a beach somewhere in your mind. How are you, Sally?
I'm really good.
Have you had a summer of any sort? Have you been able to enjoy some sun, some surf? Some West Australian sharks nipping at your heels?
I did get over to West Australia and it was delightful. I think there's something really magical about submerging yourself in the Indian Ocean. I find it just sort of restores me.
What's your favourite West Aussie beach? Are you a Cottesloe girl or do you go to Port Beach in Fremantle near the terminal there? Where do you go?
Actually, I go to Leighton, which is between Port and Cottesloe.
We're getting a bit local for all the West Australians here.
It's beautiful. Long Bay.
Dog friendly?
Dog friendly, yeah.
Leighton's a dog friendly beach. Oh, good to hear that you got some West Australian sunshine. You made it out of there okay as a Victorian. They didn't make you wear a big V on your jumper to designate you as a Victorian in these COVID times.
Yeah, we did my partner and I did a few days of isolation in WA and then they let us get our plane home, which was fortunate because I've got these kittens, right? So I had to come home to the kittens and our five-year-old.
Now, the kittens have their own gate and other kitten accessories. Did the kittens receive any accessories for Christmas?
They did.
I knew it.
They did. They got some toys. They're not really into wearing the little jumpers that we got them. I think, first of all, because they're kittens.
You got little what for them?
Just little jumpers, like little Christmas jumpers.
Like ugly Christmas jumpers for cats.
They're not ugly. They're not into them yet. Maybe we'll try again for winter.
I want to know where you get jumpers for cats.
Like many, many reputable pet retailers.
Special Pets. Are you back at work yet?
I am back at work and it's good to be here. I love work, as you know. I love it. Tell me, how was your break?
It was pretty good so far. It's just been hanging out, not gone too far from home. Reading a few books, or enjoying a bit of binge watching on telly with my daughter who's about to leave and go study interstate. So we're getting a bit of television time in, watching The West Wing again. Amidst the madness of everything that's happening in Washington right now, it's like the Disneyland version of how democracy should work. But I'm enjoying that, sort of immerse myself back in the world of Jeb Bartlett and Toby and Josh and Donna and the whole crew. It's a little safe space for those of us that believe in this democratic process, which is seemingly a bin fire at the start of 2021.
So I have a confession.
Mm-hmm.
I only watched West Wing for the first time about 6 months ago.
That's okay.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But as someone who's very interested in politics, it normally sort of draws more of a reaction. Yeah, so I watched a couple of episodes 6 months ago, and what struck me with the West Wing is that the politicians and the parliament are the good guys. Like, the show is really underpinned by this sort of quite patriotic, quite romantic belief that, like, the president is doing the right thing. And coming to it in the year 2020 as it was, watching that, I was just sort of struck by, well, firstly, how different it is to the sort of dramas that are created nowadays, but also in terms of the American Parliament, the American Congress, just how different it was. And it made me wonder if a show like that would actually fly nowadays in the US.
No way that it would. It's incredible. I guess the flip side of it is, of course, House of Cards. So if you've seen House of Cards, which started as a British miniseries in the early 90s, like a two-parter about British politics, and was adapted for US television about a decade ago, Kevin Spacey, the now disgraced Kevin Spacey, the brilliant Robin Wright in the lead roles as the Underwoods, that's the upside-down version of The West Wing. That's the dark, nasty, politically motivated animal that's out to be a predator in politics, which is what we've got now. So you could almost think of it as a documentary series. So one of the other things I've done on the last couple of weeks is just going over to visit Mum and Dad, hanging out in Broadmeadows again, talking to Mum, And thinking, you know, we always go and we search for inspiration and ideas about people whose lives offer us lessons from which we can learn and grow and maybe admire what they've achieved. We often look beyond our own boundary, which makes sense because we become familiar with the people that we know and love and we work with, and it can all seem a bit mundane. But I was talking to Mum and I thought, hang on a sec here. If we're going to do a podcast about working life, I should really talk to you because your working life is just ridiculous. Ridiculous, and it's emblematic of a world and a working class experience that is now kind of lost to us in a way, and is so very different from the world that we now inhabit. And she's kind of my hero. Mum has been an incredibly resilient, ridiculously resourceful, unflappable, and really brilliant woman who's had to cope with mental illness and all sorts of tragedies in her life, but continues to keep on keeping on. So today's podcast, I thought, would be let's talk to Mum and get an understanding of what it was like to be a working class woman in the 60s and 70s, trying to make your way in the world, raise a family, and make a living. So that's what I've done. So, Mum, we always start with the question, what was your first job ever, and what's been your worst job ever?
My first job was I worked at Stirling Factory in Western Street, Brunswick, making bib brace overalls.
How old were you when you were doing that?
I was 13 years old, my first job.
How hard was it as a 13-year-old?
Oh, I don't know. It's what you get used to. Back in those days, you went to work young, you started young, and you learnt that, you know, you got a boss, you learn, follow what the boss says, and that's about it.
Do you remember what you were doing in that first job? Were you sewing stuff?
No, I did when the bib braces come off the line, I used to have to inspect them, do the tickets and stamp all the numbers, the size, the colour, and then with the stapler, staple all of them on and then get them ready for the press.
Was it hard work?
Very, very hard work, because in between that I had to get the morning teas for the factory, get their lunches, get their afternoon tea, go to each machine as if there was a fault in the garment and do the whole lot.
And was that factory full of women doing that work? Where were all the blokes?
All women. There was only two men that worked on the press to press the bib and braces to get them ready for the men to pick them up to go and put them in the shops to sell.
How much were you getting paid for that?
I can't remember, to be quite honest, because those days you went to work and you took your pay packet home and you never opened it.
You just gave it to your dad?
That's right, yeah.
And what happened to it then?
A few drinky drinks and all that sort of stuff.
What was your worst ever job, Mum? You've done a lot of jobs over the years, but what's the one that was really, really tough?
Actually, one that was really tough I found when I worked full-time at Ford head office. That was very, very hard.
So that you worked at the Ford office in Campbellfield, which was the big factory in Melbourne?
No, I worked at the Ford plant.
Yeah.
And then I gradually was sent up to Ford head office, and that was really hard.
What sort of work was that?
Well, you'd get there at 8:30. You'd have to have your trolley ready with the coffee, the tea, the cakes, the sandwiches, the whole works, cups, saucers, go around to, you had a certain run to do to give them their coffees, then get back, unload the tea trolley, wash it all out, wash your cups, saucers, teaspoons and all the rest of it, and get it ready for the afternoon run. And in between that, you had to wash all your cups and saucers and be finished by 9:15.
So it was pretty intense. And was there someone being a bad boss giving you a hard time while you were getting it done?
No, that's the way it was. And then after that we had morning tea, and I used to do the morning tea, afternoon tea conferences. So then I'd have to quickly drink my tea, coffee, whatever I was having, run back in there. You'd have all little trolleys, double trolleys all set up that I would have to set up. And then off I'd go to the conference rooms and serve all of them. And then I'd have to go back before 12:00 serving and bring all the cups and saucers from all the conferences, wash them all, set them up for the afternoon, then plus serve out the front.
And it was you and mostly men working in those offices, wasn't it?
It was mostly men.
Did they treat you well?
Yeah, most of them were pretty good, yeah.
But you did have an accident up there. I remember as a kid you had a terrible accident working there.
That was at the plant.
Tell us what happened there.
Well, we call it the Bain Marie. And it had all the coils, you know, the big long stainless steel.
Yeah.
And the lids were very unstable because we'd have to, after we did our service and the men were fed and everything, we'd have to clean. And they were very, very, you just put it on and it could just tilt. And because I'm short, I was doing the menu. That you had the little letters,
yeah.
You know, like, is it not Lego, what do you call it?
That's right, yeah.
And I stood up on the steel thing, which was very secure, but then I bent over a little bit too far to put one of the letters in and I just fell right through.
Burnt yourself.
Yeah. Got stuck in the coils and, of course, all my stockings were burnt to my legs and everything, but I was lucky I didn't break my back or my face or anything.
How long were you in hospital for and recovering from that, Mum?
I didn't actually go into hospital. I stayed home and went to the clinic up the road, I don't know, maybe 3-4 months. But the next day they'd fixed all the tops.
But it took you to get injured to do that. Was there a union at work for you then? Was there someone looking out for you?
Yeah, there was a union, but I don't think that no one ever complained about the loose tops.
These days they probably would, but it took those sorts of accidents and those sorts of risks for people like you to take when you're working. And you would have probably seen a fair bit of that in the factory as well, people getting hurt.
Yeah. And then once someone gets hurt or they take it to court or whatever, they fix it before they go to court or whatever.
When you were working, you also had 5 kids. Mm-hmm. That's mad, and we know that you're a little bit crazy, so that's okay. But how the hell did you manage as a working woman with 5 children, at one stage 5 kids under the age of 7, including me being a pain in the ass and a handful?
Oh, you just had to do it. You get up at a certain time in the morning, you prepare the kids' breakfast, you cut their lunches, you'd give them their breakfast. Then you send them off to school with their cut lunches, and then I'd do all the housework before I went to work. So when I come home and the kids come home, all I had to do was cook the tea, and that's how it just went. I even used to work Christmas Eve.
You must have been exhausted.
I didn't feel tired, no. Well, sometimes I did, but generally you just kept going and going. That's what you did.
Because you also lived with mental illness as well, so you had that in the background too. So in between working and raising us brats, you had to deal with your own health issues.
Yeah. Well, when I worked at the factories and worked everywhere, some days I'd go in there and cry all day. But because of the mental illness, I realised that I was a bit different, so therefore I worked twice as hard as anyone else.
What do you mean you worked twice as hard?
I'd do things much quicker than other people. And then when I'd finished, I'd help other people. Because I felt that if I didn't keep in front of the others, then the boss would see me cry and would just say, look, get lost.
So you felt that because you were mentally ill and that might be demonstrated at work, that you had to prove your worth doubly in order to stay in a job?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
You see the way that people talk about mental illness now and work? Does it surprise you how far we've come in being honest about how people with mental illness can actually live in the world and should be treated equally at work?
Absolutely amazing, because I had quite a few experiences. I'd be, you know, have the ladies' dressing room or ladies' toilets, and a couple of times I'd be in the toilet and the girls would be all changing their uniform to go to work, I mean go upstairs to work. Quite a few times, so I wonder what Ellen's going to be. If she's going to be crying, that sort of thing. Yeah.
So you felt judged a little bit by your workmates. They didn't understand what was happening to you?
Had no idea in the world, none whatsoever.
That must have been pretty tough.
It was, but then again, people didn't understand back in those days. I mean, I didn't basically understand myself. I knew something was wrong, but you just had to do what you had to do.
Childcare wasn't a thing, was it? I mean,
no childcare.
I do remember when I was growing up here that a little childcare or kindergarten centre started.
Kindergarten.
Can you tell us about how that started? Do you remember that?
Yeah, there was, I think June Lever and her group from Little Athletics, they got together and they helped to organise that. So it used to be 3 days a week in the mornings, 3 days a week.
But that was started by women in a working class community who decided to get together and do something?
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been pretty radical for all the blokes around here at the time, wouldn't it?
Oh, I don't think the blokes around here at the time, because they all worked, but they all drank too. So things like that just weren't important, didn't register, weren't important. That's how it was, yeah.
Do you think men are better these days when it comes to being involved with their families and stuff?
Oh, a million times, yeah. No comparison whatsoever.
Dad's here as well, so he's just got a really, really poor review. How many stars do we give him? She won't say.
It's true. That's how it was.
Yeah, it was how it was.
It was for just about everyone.
Yeah. Coming out to Broadmeadows from the Housing Commission flats in Flemington and starting a life out here, did you ever imagine you'd still be here 40 or 50 years on and this would become home?
Yeah, I did, because I'd never ever had a home, so this is my first home. Because we paid the rent all the time, kept up with the rent to make sure that we'd always paid up. And then after that, then I worked at the MCG in the car park.
Yeah.
And when I first started there, it used to be just a Saturday, and then it became a Friday night, then it became a Sunday. And so I used to finish work at Ford head office at 2 o'clock, walk down the service road, catch up field train into the city, walk from the city to the MCG and work 5 hours in the car park.
And was that all driven to pay the house off, was it, and pay for us to go to school?
Well, basically, yeah, to pay for the kids' education, because I believed in good education. If you wanted to get anywhere, or you had to be educated.
Growing up around here, a good education wasn't necessarily on offer, though, was it?
No.
I mean, I remember my primary school experience, and I don't think I was educated well at all. And then I went to another Catholic school and wasn't very well educated. So in a way, you can want that for your kids, but even as hard as you try, unless you get lucky like I did and go to another school, you might not be able to access that sort of education. That's a problem for people growing up, still working class people growing up still in this suburb, isn't it?
Yeah, but although you went to the Catholic school and you didn't get the education that you wanted to get, it still enabled you to go to St Bernard's through your primary school. If you hadn't gone to the Catholic school, you'd never got into St Bernard's.
So the Catholic Church was good for something? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
It was. Well,
really? You
really,
believe that?
Yeah. Well, in this street or around this area, all women, most of us, had children the same age.
Yeah.
Now, I grew up sort of looking after brothers and sisters. I knew what to do. So, therefore, I put the kids in Little Ass in the summer and they trained twice a week, so they weren't running the streets.
Oh. Oh, we did run the streets anyway, but...
Oh, well, as far as I knew.
But we were good kids.
I thought I was doing a good job. And then come football season, I used to take us to the football. If we played out at Waverley, I'd get up at 6, I'd make the sandwiches, I'd do the cordial, we'd walk up to Broadmeadows, catch a train, get off in the city, catch a train out to Waverley.
It was all one big adventure.
And then when we got to Waverley, we went on the footy bus. Remember that? Oh, my God. So I took you to the footy a lot too in the winters, and you played footy, of course.
So just keeping out of trouble was the key thing around here, because growing up there were lots of kids in this area that didn't get through in the way that I did because, you know, whether their family circumstance was different or there was no job or, you know, they got mixed up with drugs or whatever.
That's
lots
right.
of my cohort people never quite got through. Did you worry that was going to happen to us as well?
No, I didn't, because I didn't, because I thought I was doing a good job.
You were. You backed yourself, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, and also, I mean, not so much you, but Stephen.
Troublesome younger brother.
He was more of a disco whatever whatever's.
Oh, glad you said that.
And so we had the garage.
Yes.
Right? So I used to set the garage up on a Saturday. Glasses, used to have the table tennis, the snooker table.
Table tennis, and he would lose and then throw his table tennis racket in a fit and chuck a sad.
Yeah. And anyway, they would go to the discos and all the rest of it. But instead of going on to another disco, they used to come back here because they could play table tennis, they could play snooker, they could play the music really loud, they could drink. And I thought to myself, now, remember what you learned when you were young? I used to bring out sausage rolls, party pies, little hot dogs and put them on the table, but I used to listen to their conversations. So I knew what was what and what they were up to.
Little spy.
Yeah.
What did you find out about me? I wasn't around very much, though, was I? I nicked off.
Yeah, you nicked off. Oh, no, you were around, but you weren't knocking around at discos like Stephen and that.
No.
No.
What was I doing, do you remember?
What you were doing?
Playing in bands and stuff.
Yeah, and on the Triple J in bands. I used to go to the footy a fair bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had different sort of friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Different sort of friends.
You put it.
That's very beautifully put, Mum. Different sort of friends. Some of them will be listening to that. I would take that. I'll take that very kindly indeed. Do you think, because you were sort of, when you were working in the MCG car park, for instance, you run into the good and the great of the world parking the cars for the Melbourne Cricket Club. Did you ever feel like people judged you because they could hear your accent that you were from Broadmeadows, so that they treated you differently?
No. The thing was, most of the people that were employed casual in the car park were uni students, right? I'm an older woman, right? And they were young guys, pretty young girls, so the bosses and that would get a bit swayed by things. You know, for instance, they all had cars, most of them, so they'd go up the shop, go over to the pub, and they may be gone for 2 hours for lunch.
Yeah.
And then they'd leave early to go home. Or if there was a footy game on, they'd spend longer in the football game. But if I did it, it would be noticed.
But so a different rule for you, do you think?
Yeah, in a way, because I was older, they were young, pretty, whatevers. But then again, I was very sort of, how do you say it, punctual. I used to, when the footy was on, in the area that I worked, I used to walk around, check the cars that no one was pinching them or knocking them off or something, where the other young ones didn't do it. You're supposed to, but they didn't.
What about the people whose cars you parked? Did you park some famous cars? Who did you like and who was a real ratbag?
I liked Gary Lyon. He was very nice. The Irish bloke.
Jimmy Steins.
He was very nice. I had a few arguments with Shane Warne.
Oh, okay. Mum versus Warney. Ah. Here's the breaking news. We bury the lead here. So you and Shane Warne. Great St Kilda man too, Mum. You and Shane Warne, what did you and Warney get into a fight about?
Well, the thing was, when you parked the cars, you had to do it one row, then double up.
Yeah.
Now, in the first row, if a car stuck out and all the cars that were coming in are bumper to bumper, bumper to bumper, then they'd all follow the car that's stuck out. They'd ruin the whole row and then it would ruin the next row, which would ruin the whole paddock.
Yeah.
And then the boss would come along in his truck and say, oh, why is this stuck out? Why is this too small? Why is this too big? So he used to come in really, really fast, slam the brake, you know. I'd go back all the time.
So you're telling Australia's greatest ever cricketer, in my humble opinion, how to drive?
No, how to park. Because I told him this is the way, and I tried to explain why when he comes in next time he has to park where the others are, I mean, beside the others, not a mile in front or a mile back. But for a little while, he didn't get it.
Was there some sharp words exchanged? Did you have a few terse words with Warney?
I did, yeah. He said, oh, why do I have to do that for? And I explained to him about the parking and why it is necessary to park next to the car. But then one day came and he bought me a nice cup of coffee.
Warney bought you a cup of coffee to make peace.
And then there was another day, he got out of his car and he parked it the right way for once, and it's okay. And then I looked in his car and he left his key and his wallet in the car. So I'm yelling out, hey, hey, hey. And he yelled out, what the bloody hell do you want now? It's park right, isn't it? I said, no, your keys and your wallet are in your car.
Did he say thank you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So finally you became mates with Warnie.
Oh, just hello, how are you sort of thing, yeah. Finally, he parked the car the way he should have.
Somebody was able to tell Shane Warne what to do. He finally met his match.
It was all right. It just had to, but a lot of people, a lot of players did that.
Yeah. So, Mum, you look at the world now, and you did it really hard, you know. You grew up in a tough family in Brunswick and Coburg and had to work from the age of 13. What do you think of what young people face now in terms of getting a job and being able to do what you and Dad did, was buy this house and start from virtually nothing and make a life for yourself? Do you think it's harder now than it was for you?
No, I don't think so, because I think that there mightn't be as much work around as what there was back then, but there is still work around. And I think that what they get from the government, a lot of the young ones, not all, but a lot of them, if they're still at home, they might think, oh, I don't like that job, or I'm not going to go for that, because they know that they have a little bit financial behind them and things like that. But in some ways it's good, some ways it's harder.
Yeah. What do you think of Scott Morrison?
Oh, I don't like him that much. I don't know that much about him, but as long as he's on this Hillsong business, forget it.
So you've seen some Scott Morrison action on tally, him at Hillsong. Not your kind of thing?
Hillsong?
Yeah.
No. Bible bash. Trying to frighten people. Their motto is look after one another, keep one another at least reasonably wealthy or fairly well off, and then that's it.
Bugger everybody else?
More or less.
Do you like their singing? Do you like their music? I know you like your music. Yeah. Do you like the Hillsong tunes?
Yeah, they're not bad. Some of the Hillsong hymns are nice. They are.
Not as good as Elvis, Mum.
Can't beat that man, can you?
Okay, final question. If you had to choose to have one dinner date, it's going to be Elvis or Robert Harvey, who played for the Saints. You can only have a dinner date with one of them. Who are you taking to dinner, Elvis or Robert Harvey from the mighty Saints?
Oh, I'd have to go Elvis, but sorry, Robert Harvey, please come back the second time. Love Robert Harvey.
And there she is, the amazing, the wonderful Ellen Leach, my mother, working class hero, and a bit of her story that I wanted to share with everyone because I just think she's amazing.
Yeah, she's such an inspiration. You said at the top that she was your hero. I think she's my hero too now, and I can imagine a hero to many of the listeners. So thank you for sharing your mum with us.
No worries. Thanks, Mum, for participating too. And thank you for listening on The Job, the podcast. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Give Ellen 5 stars. She deserves it. And share it with your friends. Share it on your social media pages so people know more about our podcast. What else can they do, Sal?
Let us know on Twitter that you're enjoying it. We would love to hear from you. I'm at Sally Rugg. Francis is at St. Frankly.
That's right.
St. Frankly. And keep listening.
Enjoy your summer. Binge watch House of Cards and The West Wing in conjunction with one another. It's kind of, that'd be a weird thing to do, but, you know, light and dark. And we'll catch you next week. Don't forget, if you've got any questions about the way of the world of work should be and how you can make your working life better, go to australianunions.org.au, and we'll catch you for the next episode of On The Job.